Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM or to the podcast at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Now, here's your host and producer, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We are still talking about the lava eruption, and today we have updates from Hawaii County Fire Chief Darren Rosario, the County Finance Director Deanna Sacco, Ross Birch of the Island of Hawaii Visitor Bureau, Dr. Kristen Rahala about the emotional impact, and an update on a story we told last week about a family that had no idea if their home was covered by lava or saved. Fire Chief Darren Rosario, thank you for joining us today. Aloha.
Aloha. Glad to be here.
Hawaii County Fire Department is one leg of our very important team of first responders. Tell us what the fire department's role is during this lava eruption down in the Leilani Estates and surrounding areas.
The Hawaii Fire Department's role in the eruption is to support the community by helping with evacuation, providing safe egress out of the areas. Our main role right now has been to collaborate with the Hawaii Army's National Guard's Combat Support Team. This is a team that protects our state in the event of any type of hazardous materials incident and so forth. And that's a team that we train with every year. So what the CST team and the Hawaii Fire Department's personnel are doing collaboratively is going out in specific areas, and we're monitoring the sulfur dioxide levels throughout the communities area and determining where it's safe to have anyone in the area or how long people can stay in there. And it's to support the mayor's mission to try to provide as much normalcy to the community as it is safe to do in light of the eruptions there. So a couple of things we've been doing is doing some rescues in the area of people that have been caught off guard, as well as providing just general information regarding sulfur dioxide levels and just basically being out there for our community.
I didn't know you guys worked with the military on this kind of thing on a regular basis. That's fabulous that you actually trained for this kind of activity. But for rescues, I know that your team did do rescues on that Saturday evening when lava first cut off some areas, Po'ohiki Road, for example. I know your pilots are skillful. I've seen them in action, and it's extremely impressive what they can do. But it seems awfully risky to have them flying over hot lava and hot lava fountains. So talk about the risk, because we never want to lose one of our valuable Hawaii Fire Department personnel, nor have them injured. So just talk about what that risk is of doing that particular activity.
Yeah, so good points that you brought up. You know, obviously one of the risks is flying over an active lava flow. Should there be an aircraft accident, it would be really unforgiving. Second is flying in an area of the increasing emissions from the volcanic activity, primarily sulfur dioxide. One of the things that we do as a team is not to allow any of our personnel into these hazard areas unless it is something that we absolutely must do. So in the periods where we did those rescues of the residents that were cut off by the fast-moving lava flow that night, it's a risk benefit. So the benefit is making a life safety decision to rescue people at the risk of the aircraft and the crew having to do the work that they did. You know, they train extensively so that they can do their job under the most arduous conditions. We monitor with the various agencies. One of the agencies is the weather people, as well as the modeling that's done by the Department of Health as far as plume modules for gases that are going out. And one thing we also do is personally monitor the sulfur dioxide levels while we're flying. So in that night's case, we flew in and we did what we could up until the pilot reported that conditions were getting more risky. We relocated to a safe landing zone, got them some additional equipment to better protect their respiratory system as well as the monitors, and when it was safe to execute the rescues as safely as we could, we went in and got those guys out. There was three personnel that we were unfortunately unable to extricate due to darkness and increasing sulfur dioxide and visibility. So we were in communications with them through the civil defense, had them shelter in place. Two of them got out on their own on foot, and the third person was extricated the very next morning. So, you know, we look at every mission for the risk factors that are there, and most certainly is we'll never take on a mission that does not have necessity to execute a life-saving measure. So there's a lot of times where our aircraft will be grounded versus going in to do something that, we can wait for. But obviously, the rescue of a life is something that we'll evaluate and carry out our mission as safely as we can.
You know, there could be a huge cost to personnel in doing that kind of activity. Do you have any idea what the cost in dollars is to execute that kind of rescue?
With our aircraft program, it's built into our operating budget every year. Generally, the cost of our aircraft is roughly around $580 per flight hour. To say that there's an additional cost, it would really be if we exceeded our flight hours that are budgeted for the year. So right now, we're well within our aviation budget. There's months where we have a lot of flight activity, and there's months where the flight activity is very low. So hopefully at the end of the year, it balances out. We're on track to balance out as far as our aviation budget for this year. If we look at that, this is going to be a longer prolonged event, and we analyze the use and the need for our aircraft, then, we adjust our budget. But, moving forward, once the life safety factor is removed, whether it be the incident stabilizes or in the unfortunate event that the area gets cut off and it is an evacuated area, then the likelihood of having to use our aircraft on a regular basis will be greatly reduced.
Chief, here's kind of a policy question. You mentioned the mayor's desire to allow people to live a normal life, but it seems foolish to me to allow people into areas that are very close to the lava flow and are potentially likely to put the people in a position of being trapped, which means that your guys and gals can then be at high risk. Is there a way to stop that pattern? Because I know right now your guys and the military are training to potentially go in and rescue more people. Why are we letting people in those areas if now we're training people to rescue those folks? It just seems like a bad policy.
I'm not in a position to challenge anyone else's policy, but I can share with you that whenever we receive a mission, our job is to carry out that mission as safe as we can. And I can share with you that our input is greatly taken and that we come up with a plan to ensure the safety of our personnel. And at no time we would do something that puts them at very serious, great risk. Part of being a firefighter, unfortunately, is that we do have to go into areas that normal people should be evacuating from. That's why we continue to train and continue to ask for the equipment that we get. But I just want to assure the public that whatever mission orders comes our way, we're fully ready to carry out that mission, and we do it as safe as possible. But with that being said, I do know that people respect if I make a decision to not use personnel in a certain situation. At no time will it put people at an obvious great risk.
Fire Chief, I understand there was at least one fire that happened as a result of the lava, and I'm curious, what do you do in that kind of case? Do you actually fight the fire or let it burn itself out?
We actually just had one brush fire that the lava flow started a few nights ago out in the Pekal area. Our monitors picked up that the sulfur dioxide levels was dangerously high. So that's one there that I took the risk benefit of it. The fire was advancing. We made a call for a mandatory evacuation of the residents in the area because I was not going to put any firefighting forces down into the brush fire area due to the sulfur dioxide. But we also look at the area, and we could see that the fire was heading to a greener, pastured area. Looking at the winds, as well as the topography and the fuel that it was going to head to, we're pretty confident that the fire would be held in check. And then maybe about an hour into the fire, we had some really good rains that helped keep that in check. And eventually the fire pretty much self-extinguished on its own. If we're ever in a situation where it's safe to do so, then yes, definitely we'll mitigate the fire, either with our ground apparatus or our aerial apparatus. But for that one particular fire, the sulfur dioxide levels was at a level that did not allow us to safely put guys in there.
Have any Hawaii County Fire Department personnel been injured?
No, during this event, which started on the first week of May, we have not had any Hawaii Fire Department personnel injured.
Good, good, good. Your guys mostly work 24 on, 24 off, but I know this is putting extra stress on them and also on the battalion chiefs and on yourself. Can you keep up this pace? If this lava flow lasts for several months, the 1955 flow in the same area lasted 3 months, can you keep up the pace, or are you going to need to somehow call in reinforcements?
That's an excellent question. So we've not waited. What we did from the very beginning was implement our incident management team concept. So the incident management team is a team that's made up of trained, certified personnel that come into an area affected like what we're having now, and they take over the direction and so forth of the incident so that the local resources can concentrate on their day-to-day jobs as well as assist in the mitigation of the event. So currently we have members of the Maui Fire Department's incident management team, and we've married them up with our Hawaii County Fire Department incident management team so that our guys can get more exposure, you know, on this type of event. Right now, we do have a lot of personnel that are being held over to be part of our emergency response team that goes down and does the monitoring, any type of evacuation assistance, any type of medical assistance. We formed a team that has a firefighting apparatus and a medic unit that's attached directly to the Leilani eruption team. And another aspect that we have to also do is our 24-hour, 7 days a week liaison to the Emergency Operations Center at Civil Defense. So yes, if this becomes long-term, that's a lot of people working with very minimal time off. So very shortly, we're going to have a department meeting with my staff to just coordinate that moving forward. As of right now, we're doing a really great job. The men and women under me are the ones that really are putting out the workload here, and they're doing a fabulous job trying to assist our community. And, you know, we just ask for everyone's patience. It's a unique event. It's an ongoing natural disaster, unlike a tsunami or a hurricane where the impact hits and then the impact is over. This is an evolving, slow-moving natural disaster. You don't see this anywhere else in the world except for some few isolated areas that also have eruptive activity. I would say for the long haul, yes, we can do what we need to do. We definitely would have to make some adjustments, but we stand prepared to help our community in the long haul.
And it sounds like none of your regular jobs, fighting fires or attending to motor vehicle accidents or rescues in the ocean, it sounds like none of that has been affected, that you're still doing everything plus the lava.
Yes, what we made sure is with the additional resource team that we formulated just for the lava flow event, that took the pressure off of the Pahoa Fire Station's responses in that area. So the Pahoa Fire Station is doing its daily job of their emergency medical service, their fire calls. Having that response unit for the lava flow event itself, it puts the pressure off of the normal day-to-day work that we normally do in that area. And the Puna District is one of our busiest districts for EMS calls as well as fire calls.
Wow. Fire Chief Darren Rosario, kudos to you and to all the men and women of Hawaii County Fire Department. You know, we couldn't be without you, and we're just so grateful that you guys and gals are there for us, particularly now when the demands are even greater. Anything you'd like to add before we say aloha?
Earlier you talked about allowing people in. A decision was made to try to bring normalcy to the community. And, you know, as the fire chief, in the interest of safety of the men and women of all the public safety organizations and our private organizations that are out there trying to help the community, I just want to plead and ask that you go in and get your stuff out and leave the area and be safe. We're seeing so much on social media, people entering the lava cracks to take pictures, going on the properties that have large lava cracks. If I went on my property and there was a crack, that just means it could become a fissure or it could get bigger. Just keep in mind that as a firefighter, if you get into trouble, it's our job and we're going to execute the job. But I really would like to prevent from having to put the men and women of my department in harm's way when it could have been prevented. So please be safe out there. Don't take any risk more than what you need. You know, we certainly would like to help you to get everything out that you can. Say goodbye. For a lot of people, their homes mean so much to them. It's just a devastating time for the community. So I just ask and plead that you keep that in mind, that, you know, should you get into trouble, there's a lot of other people and their families that become greatly affected as well. Be safe and know that we're right there for you.
Fire Chief Darren Rosario, thank you so much. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you.
And a brief interruption to remind you, you are listening to Island Issues, Stories of the Big Island. I'm Sherry Bracken, your host and producer. We just finished talking with Hawaii County Fire Chief Darren Rosario. Our next update is from Hawaii County Finance Director Deanna Sacco. One of the big concerns for Hawaii County is the impact of the lava eruption on the budget. And today we have in the studio Deanna Sacco, who is the County Director of Finance. The impact of the lava flow on the county budget, can you give us a sense as to what it is, how much lost revenue in property tax, and what do you know about the potential for increased expenses?
First of all, we are going to have a decrease in real property tax revenue in the Pune area, especially the area being impacted by lava. And we know for sure probably at least 1.2 million, but we're estimating that, you know, the lava will continue to enter the ocean and other areas will be impacted. So our best estimate is probably $3 million on the upcoming budget year. It could go as high as $6 million if a much larger area is impacted, but right now we're using $3 million as an estimate. The expenses, of course, a lot of it is overtime. You know, we have police, firefighters. A lot of our employees are out there working very hard. Our highways guys, parks and recs are manning shelters. So we definitely have a lot of costs there. It's probably about $800,000 per pay period or $1.6 million per month. We do hope to get FEMA assistance. The president has signed the federal declaration. They typically reimburse us 75% and then we have to pay 25%.
Well, that's really good news.
Mm-hmm. The biggest impact on us is actually the cash flow. Sometimes the federal government is a little slow to pay.
Well, I understand actually that the money goes from the federal government to the state government and that we have not yet even been reimbursed for expenses from the 2006 earthquake nor the 2014 Hurricane Azelle. Is that correct?
That's correct. 2006, we're very close to closing out, but they still owe us a little bit more money. And in 2014, both events, yes, we've been paid only half.
The county budget has to balance. That is in our charter, and that's actually a good thing. But the decision now is going to be up to the county council as well as the mayor as to how to balance the budget. The budget's around $518 million,
Correct. And
this is going to impact that. What are some of the options that you're discussing with the mayor and the county council as to how to cover what is obviously going to be less revenue but more expense?
One option is to reduce expenditures. A total is about $7 million. If we assume that this event will last for all of next year, and our 25% share would be roughly $4 million. So the $3 million lost in revenue, $4 million expenses, $7 million total. The budget's actually already pretty tight, with recent increases due to collective bargaining and different things. So cutting $7 million is going to be definitely a challenge. So we also looked at what is the possibility of raising real property tax rates across the board increases so that we all would share in that burden. And then also looking at the impact of implementing the general excise tax that was deferred till next January, possibly reconsidering that and putting it back on the table. No one wants to raise taxes. Right now, a lot of the businesses are hurting, you know, the decline in visitors right now. So we're trying to see what we can do. And we're also working with the state to see if they can help us, similar to what they did with Kauai and Oahu, and giving them kind of that cash influx.
In a family or in businesses, if there's an increase in expense and a loss of revenue, mm-hmm. one of the options is also to cut expenses. Is Hawaii County considering actually cutting expenses or looking at ways to make up revenue other than just increasing property taxes?
The first thing we proposed to the council was to actually cut expenses. It's just hard to cut the full $7 million in expenses. So definitely we can reduce in some areas. It's a challenge. A lot of people won't be happy with what's cut, probably.
Okay. Anything else we should know, Deanna Sacco?
No, we're doing our best to keep everything in place, and we really appreciate all the hard work of all the county employees.
Thank you so much for stopping by. And you may learn more about the impact on the budget. There was a budget forum last Thursday at West Hawaii Civic Center. It will air within the next couple of weeks on Naleo TV. I was there moderating. I found it enlightening. A note, the previous administration had to cut $38 million from the budget. So it would seem to this layperson that cutting $7 million might be possible without raising taxes. Next, we want to find out more about the number one industry on the island, and that is tourism, and how we are faring. Ross Birch is the head of the Island of Hawaii Visitors Bureau. Aloha, Ross.
Good morning.
The lava flow, how is it affecting tourism up to this point, and what are you expecting for the future? Since tourism is our number one industry on this island, we really need to understand.
For the first part of May, up through the 20th, our numbers are actually showing that our arrivals are up 25% year over year.
Well, that means people didn't cancel when they heard we had a big lava eruption.
I think from the immediate reaction, we got very little cancellations from those who had the trip scheduled that were within that 1 week to 2 weeks of coming out to Hawaii. You know, you'd make all your plans, you get your vacation set, and it's really hard to say, I'm just not going to go right now. So they are coming, and now they're becoming our biggest advocates of what the experiences are on island and how little the lava has affected their vacation. We're really looking at the booking pace going into summer has been a challenge, and we've had some larger groups cancel. So our biggest impact on the hotel side is not getting the amount of bookings we're anticipating at this time of the year, and it's amplified by cancellations over the summer period for a lot of the groups, especially school groups. The Department of Education put out a memo very quickly after this happened, canceling all group activity from the Department of Education on the island.
Well, that's really a bummer, partly because a lot of these kids would not be in the path of the lava flow.
Some of them do have specific excursions to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and I can understand if that happens. But yes, most of them are here to do community projects. They're here to do other type of education. They're here to do astronomy. That's part of our initial impact of cancellations. The cruise lines was probably our biggest direct impact from an island-wide standpoint, both in Kona and Hilo, when the cruise lines pulled back out of those ports. That's a huge burden on our local retailers and our small businesses. Really, those tour operators, that's what they count on. They count on that weekly docking, and they have that set. So they're losing anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 each time that boat chooses not to come to the port.
Well, right now, we're recording this on Thursday, and I'm looking out the window of the studio, and yay, there's a cruise ship in Kailua Bay. And I understand the Norwegian Cruise Lines, our regular Tuesday in Hilo, Wednesday in Kona ship, is going to be returning. Is that right?
Yes, they've confirmed to come back to Kona on the 30th and then come back into Hilo following that.
That's great. What about other cruise lines? I'm assuming, obviously, your organization, the Hawaii Island Visitor Bureau and the Hawaii Tourism Authority, are reaching out. Are you feeling like other cruise lines are going to continue coming to this island?
Yeah, most of them were seasonal cruise lines that were coming in. Some of them did come into Kona, spend a little extra time in Kona, but they're passing by Hilo for different reasons. Some are staying out at sea. Some are cutting the trip short that are going into other destinations and adding another day wherever they're going at that point. NCL is probably the biggest one that we see on a regular basis. A lot of the businesses are tailored to satisfy that. The other cruise ships are kind of that extra great seasonal opportunities we have. We're missing out on a couple spots there, but that's not as great of an impact.
Well, I know that it does have an effect on local organizations like Body Glove and Jack's Diving Locker and Fairwind and all the people that do get that influx for that day. So I'm hoping they come back. Now, Ross Birch, we had heard initially that bookings were 50% down, 5-0. Tell us more about that.
50% off of pace is what the average has been. And pace is basically a hotel saying that I plan on having this many bookings by this point for this period of time. So it's kind of as of May 15th, I planned on having this many bookings for June, July, and August already in the hopper, ready to go, which is what they're showing is they're about 50% down on their anticipated bookings for those future months. And that could be through the rest of the year as well.
What is Hawaii Tourism Authority and your organization, Island of Hawaii Visitors Bureau, what are you doing to get a message out to folks who may be potential tourists that our entire island is not covered by an active lava flow?
The first thing we did, and this was within a couple of days after the incident had even started, is we knew that we had to get out in front of it, but we really were never able to get out in front of the national media. So we provided basically an ongoing, live, updated on a regular basis, a fact sheet that said, here's the true reality. Here's what the situation is. This is where it's at. Here's a map. Here's all the different websites you can go to get any information you want to get so that you know exactly what the situation is. That was out there within the first week that all this was going on. Our partners picked up on that. They started resending that out. They used that as communication for the individuals calling in to cancel, gave them tangible reasoning to go trying to convince someone to still come to the island. So we had all that set. Then the next level is to really get our partners on island showcasing their individuals that are enjoying their tours, that are enjoying their hotels, that are enjoying the vacation that they're on right now, and go live basically and push that social media out. We knew that there was really no chance for us to get out in front of the national media. It's headline grabbing and it is sensational and it's a really good story, and I'm hoping that it's going to become old after a while and won't be old to us. It will still be part of our daily routine, but I think from the big boys that are still on island here, it's going to become repeating the same thing. And once that happens, it's old news.
What's the total amount of dollars that come to our island from tourism?
About $2.4 billion.
To this island?
To this island specifically.
Whoa.
That was our number last year.
That's a lot.
We're on pace to actually probably get to 2.6 or 2.7 this year.
Thank you so much, Ross Birch. Next topic, the emotional impact of this lava flow, whether one is directly affected or one is just a resident of this island. I'm now talking with Dr. Kristen Rahala. She's a licensed clinical psychologist and the director of behavioral health with the Hawaii Island Family Health Center, part of the Hawaii Island Family Medicine Residency Program through Hilo Medical Center. Aloha. Thanks for talking to us, Dr. Rahala.
Aloha, Sherry.
Dr. Rahala, I really wanted to find out more about the emotional toll this lava event is taking and how people can deal with it a little bit better. I was in Pahoa just this last week, and I feel like there's different categories of people who are being affected by this. Some have already lost their homes, and it's horrible for them, but they have certainty. But I also talked with folks who are out of their homes and have no idea if their home will survive or if they might be landlocked by lava. So I'd like you to help us understand what kind of emotional impact this lava flow can have on people, whether it's absolutely direct or something that might happen in the future.
That's a great question. It's important to remember that it's normal to have a lot of different reactions to this flow. And whenever we deal with a big life change or things that are threatening to us, it's common to experience a mix of emotions, fear or worry or anger, sadness and grief, and even just some numbness or disconnection. What we know is that when these feelings often get amplified in situations when it's unclear when the stressor will end. Speaking to the kind of those two different groups, it can often be very difficult when you're left in the air and you don't know what your next decision should be or could be.
How do people know they're being affected? Because there's some people who are pretty stoic. There's other people who are very willing to let their emotions be out there. So especially for the stoic ones, how do they know that they might need a little bit of emotional support and comfort?
You know, whenever our stress response is on and it's being activated constantly, there are some signs that we can look for. Things like poor concentration. We might feel like it's harder to keep things organized or feel forgetful. Fatigue or irritability, noticing that maybe we're snapping a little bit more than we meant to, or being frustrated by little things that wouldn't have frustrated us a few weeks ago. So I think it's important to pay attention to those signs. And then that numbness and disconnection itself can be protective in some ways, but is also a sign that we're going through an ordeal and some stress.
There's thousands who are being affected. What do you suggest that will actually make it easier for folks to deal with the emotional impact?
There are a few things. It's important whenever we're dealing with a crisis, getting our basic needs met is the most important thing first, making sure that we're getting some kind of shelter or water, eating regularly. And as much as we can, trying to maintain some kind of a routine is extremely important. And this is especially true for our keiki. So even though our routine may have shifted in some ways, trying to maintain school or work as much as we can, or even having a set meal time or meal place or an evening walk, putting something in the day that's predictable gives us a sense of comfort in times of stress. Creating some routines can be very useful. And then I think just acknowledging that this is a difficult time and giving ourselves space to feel whatever it is that we are feeling, rather than trying to push down what might come up. So even if it's just taking a minute to allow yourself to feel sad or to feel worried, it's important to acknowledge the emotions that do come up. And then making time for yourself to do things that you enjoy or give yourself some time to relax, even if you just start with 5 minutes a day. There are many different ways to turn on our relaxation response or calm our bodies down. So things as simple as setting a timer on your phone to take a minute's worth of deep breaths, or grounding with your five senses and noticing the different colors around you or the sounds that you can hear, I think can be very useful in just counterbalancing that automatic stress response that is kind of on all the time at this point. And then staying connected with our social supports is important, reaching out to the community and to your loved ones. And although it's important for us to stay informed with things like alerts from the civil defense I think making sure that we're not looking at social media or the news in excess. So giving ourselves break from social media can also be useful as a way to disengage a little bit from the stress or the panic.
I think that's a great idea. Actually, I find that since we've had so much turmoil politically at the national level, I find that watching less news is a good thing for me. So I can certainly see how that would help folks. Are there professional resources available for folks who might want to see a counselor of some kind?
Yes. There are a few different options for short-term help if you're feeling in crisis or in distress. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration, or SAMHSA, has a disaster distress helpline, and that's 1-800-985-5990. And then there's also the Crisis Line of Hawaii that's expecting more people reaching out for short-term help right now. And that number is 1-800-753-6879. 1-800-753-6879. And the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration Disaster Distress Helpline is 1-800-985-5990. And those are both 24 hours a day. And then I think also it's reaching out to the community centers in Pahoa and Te Ao, the centers of a lot of support, or Pu'uhonua Puna, that has been pulled together by community members on Highway 130 as well. It can be good sources for information to get some other basic needs met and connect you with county housing authorities and financial assistance and things like that.
You know, this lava situation obviously is directly affecting folks in the Puna area, but there's people all over the island who feel particularly bad or sad and are very empathetic about the situation, or may themselves be affected by the fact that our tourism is down. They may have lost their work. They may have lost part of their livelihood. Somebody told me the other day, I really feel bad, but I really feel guilty. I still have a home to live in. Could you just address that situation a little?
Yeah, there's no question that this flow is having a far-reaching effect. We're already feeling the effects on tourism industry and economy. It's normal for those of us who might not even be displaced to still be experiencing these feelings of sadness and worry and anxiety. You know, in psychology, we have terms like secondary or vicarious trauma. And I think of those first responders and the volunteers who are on the ground who may themselves might be in crisis, but should watch out for those same warning signs to see if they're being burnt out or also being affected emotionally. And so I think it can always be helpful to put your values into action. So if you're, you know, wanting to help in some way or feeling sad, connecting with the community support to the community resources that are already out there and seeing if there are ways for you to get involved in just signing up with the Red Cross to serve a meal or donating some clothes. So putting some of your values into action, I think, can be a really useful way to feel like you're making a difference in these times.
Dr. Rahala, I understand that you live close to the lava impacted area or in it.
Yes, I live down in Kapoho.
Well, how are you doing?
I'm trying to take some of my own advice, so being patient with myself and allowing myself to experience those feelings of sadness. I think I was surprised initially at the sadness that comes with having to leave a home that you love and a community that you love. So giving myself that space to have those emotions. And I have a tremendous community here at Hilo Medical Center and with the residency program. So connecting with my colleagues and my supports and my friends and family, I think, has been very important for me.
Dr. Kristen Rahala, thank you so much for your time. Aloha.
Aloha.
And finally, an update. Last Sunday morning, we spoke with Larry and Linda Lani Morris. Their home on Pohoiki Road had been threatened by lava, and we didn't know when we aired the program on Sunday morning what the resolution was. So I gave Larry a call. Good morning, Larry Morris. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Sherry.
So, Larry, last time we spoke on the radio, it was for the Sunday, May 20th Island Issues program. And at that time, you had learned just a couple of days before that it was highly likely that your home on Po'ohiki Road was at best locked in by the lava, but at worst, it could have been destroyed. Tell us what you know now that you didn't know then, because then things were very uncertain.
Yes, you're correct. Just this past Monday, I had the opportunity to go up and helicopter tour. Pilot was very cooperative. He circled our property many times for us to take some great pictures. And we are a island oasis in the middle of the black lava. And we are locked out for now. And the main flow from Fissure 20 is going up past our property and has already made its way to the ocean. So I'm still hopeful that the property will be spared. No lava is touching my property, and out of the other seven orchards that are all connected, three of them had some lava that came onto their acreage, but all of their homes, there's eight homes standing. I know mine is looking very good, and several of the others, the lava had gotten close and they might have had some damage, but it looked pretty tranquil down there, a little browner than I like, but hopefully we'll get some rains and that will bring it right up. And then if Paley will stop with her mischief, we can get back into the farm.
But basically what you're saying is it's sort of a miracle. Your home and the other homes have pretty much been spared. That's amazing.
I agree. There's so much devastation around us, above us, below us. I have friends and neighbors that have completely lost their homes and most of their property. It just seems, for some reason, maybe Paley likes macadamia nuts, but all of these properties that used to be one big 40-something acre orchard have been spared. And so if she'll cooperate, then I can get back in and make this year's harvest later on. You know, I've got to be realistic. I know sometimes these can last for months, maybe longer, but if I can get in there within a few months, that would be wonderful. And I just need to get back to work.
And that was a conversation I had with Larry Morris, and thankfully their home has been spared, at least so far. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. I'll see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.